Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. John Steele here again in the host's chair this week. In a moment, all of the latest J2 and J3 news is coming up, and my guest to talk about the J2 action this week is none other than James Gallagher, one of Florida's finest exports, I'm sure you'll agree. So in a moment, I'm going to do a solo roundup of all of the latest J2 action, the round 28 games from last weekend. Then you're going to hear James and I talking about some of the key points in detail, especially with a focus on FC Ryukyu, which is James's specialist subject, of course. After that, you'll have the usual J3 roundup with Magic Mike Innes in JTalk Short Corner. So without further ado then, here's a look back at some of the latest events in J2. Before we look at the J2 action from round 28, we should talk about the last remaining Emperor's Cup round of 16 game that was played last midweek, July the 20th, and Tokyo Verdy did brilliantly to knock out their J1 visitors Iwata in the rearranged game. Verdy more than matched their opponents for the majority of this game, and they had plenty of chances to score, especially in the first half when they hit the crossbar and forced a pair of fine saves from the Iwata goalkeeper. But the breakthrough for Verdy didn't come until the 82nd minute when they went ahead thanks to a penalty from Mizuki Arai. Iwata forced extra time with a 93rd minute equaliser with Rio Germain heading in at close range. But then in the 114th minute, a low drive from almost 25 yards from Yuta Narawa after a corner was cleared to him on the edge of the Iwata penalty area secured the win for Verdy. Yes, 2-1 after extra time. So well done to them, and they'll host another J1 side, Kyoto, in the quarterfinals in early September. On to the J2 action from the weekend then, and in round 28, two matches were unfortunately postponed due to COVID-19 cases. Those are the games between Mito and Oita, and Jeff Chiba and Kofu, so they'll be played sometime in August. I think they've been rearranged already. So from the nine games that were played last weekend, it's getting exciting at the top of the table. Two of the top three sides, Niigata and Sendai, lost at home in round 28, which means that leaders Yokohama FC are now 3 points clear at the summit after they won 1-0 away at Tokyo Verdy. The vital goal came in the 77th minute here, Katsuya Iwatake heading home an in-swinging corner from Heine. Verdy goalkeeper Mateus complained that he'd been impeded by Zane Isaka on the goal, but I think in reality he got caught underneath the cross and then just wasn't strong enough to get any hands on it. So it was 1-0. Yokohama playing with black armbands after the death of Ryoya Yamashita's grandfather during the week, former Verdy player of course, Yamashita, nearly had the lead early on with Gabriel's header coming back off the face of the crossbar. And Verdy's best chance came shortly before Iwatake's goal when Mizuki Arai's right-footed curler was brilliantly saved by Akinori Ichikawa in the Yokohama FC goal. Ichikawa's first start of the season, by the way, with Sven Brodersen, the regular keeper, not even in the matchday squad. Presumably coronavirus is the reason for that, because many teams report in positive tests at the moment. So Yokohama FC won 1-0 away at Tokyo Verdy, but Niigata, who were in second, went down 3-2 at home to 5th place Okayama in a cracking game at the Big Swan. Niigata were 2-1 up at half-time, but it was Okayama who'd struck first in the 13th minute, Yudai Tanaka firing a low 25-yard shot in off the post. Niigata goalkeeper Ryosuke Kojima might be disappointed that he didn't do better with this one. He was a bit slow to react, but an early lead for Okayama. But it was 1-1 8 minutes later, thanks to a great free kick from Yuzuru Shimada. Yordi Bice pulled down Koji Suzuki right on the corner of the Okayama penalty area, and from the resulting free kick, Shimada sent a low curler through a crowd of players and into the bottom corner for 1-1. In the 32nd minute, Ryotaro Ito put Niigata in front with a left-footed drive from a very similar position to Tanaka's goal for Okayama earlier on, but Ito's shot had more power. So 2-1 at half-time. The pick of the goals was probably Okayama's equaliser. Right at the start of the second half, Mitch Duke brilliantly glancing in a header from Kodai Sano's left-wing cross to make it 2-2. And after that, both sides went for a winner, Okayama nearly had it, 10 minutes from time, when Ryosuke Kawano hit the crossbar with a header. But Kawano was involved in the Okayama winner when it eventually came. In the 88th minute, his cross was looking for Boyce at the back post, and under pressure, a Niigata player, I think it was Takahiro Ko, headed the ball back at his own goalkeeper. Kojima in goal was able to parry the ball and keep it out, but Boyce was on hand to sweep in the rebound to make the final score Niigata 2, Okayama 3. Two defeats in the last four games for Niigata, whereas Okayama in fifth are going well, but still 10 points off the automatic promotion places. Now, Yokohama at the top are 3 points clear of Niigata, and second place Niigata are 3 points ahead of Sendai in third, who lost 2-1 at home to fourth place and banging form Nagasaki. Quite a lot to unpack from this game. Nagasaki took the lead in fairly controversial circumstances in the 11th minute. Edgar Jr. seemed to control the ball with his hand when he latched onto Masaru Kato's chip pass into the penalty area and fired the ball in for 1-0. In the old rules, that would have been a ball to hand and been okay, but the ball kind of bounced up off Edgar Jr.'s knee onto his hand. I think if it had been a defender, then it would have been a penalty. So he and Nagasaki got away with one there. After a lengthy chat with the assistant referee, the goal was given, so it was 1-0 to the visitors early on. Shenanigans at half-time as well. Now, Sendai were ordered by the match commissioner to change their shirts for the second half. They'd been playing in their summer uniform of kind of navy blue and white hoops in the first half. It was decided that they were clashing too much with Nagasaki's white away shirts. So Sendai played the first half in their summer uniform, but were back in their familiar yellow home shirts for the second half. This also necessitated a change of uniform for Nagasaki's goalkeeper, Masaya Tomisawa. He had to change from a yellow goalkeeper's kit in the first half to purple in the second. So plenty of sartorial excitement at halftime here. Nagasaki got the vital second goal from a well-worked corner routine midway through the second half, which ended with Ryohei Yamazaki firing in Hijiri Kato's low delivery at the near post. Yeah, really well worked to goal for 2-0. Sendai rallied though. Motohiko Nakajima should have pulled a goal back when Masato Nakayama set him up, but he dragged his shot wide. Nakayama though did earn a stoppage time penalty for his side when he was pushed in the back as a cross came into the box. He took the penalty himself and scored. That made it 2-1. There were some handbags as well after the goal, as Nagasaki's keeper Tomizawa held on to the ball and to waste some time and wouldn't give it back. But play eventually restarted, but with no further chances, it finished Sendai 1, Nagasaki 2. A first defeat in six games for Sendai since they lost 3-2 at home to Yokohama FC a few games ago. So two very damaging home defeats there for Sendai. Nagasaki going really well at the moment, 5 points behind Sendai at the moment, but unbeaten in 10 matches. They are one of the form teams in J2 at the moment. And speaking of form teams, 6th place Kumamoto, we talked about heavily with Gary Irwin last week. Kumamoto a level with Okayama on 44 points after they breezed past Kanazawa 3-0 at home in round 28. It was 1-0 to Kumamoto at half-time, thanks to a 19th minute goal from Toshiki Takahashi. He volleyed in a cross from Kohei Kuroki inside the 6-yard box. Right at the start of the second half, it was almost 2-0 when Naohiro Sugiyama rattled the Kanazawa crossbar from about 20 yards. Sugiyama, though, wasn't to be denied, and in the 51st minute, he tried a low shot from a very similar position to his earlier effort and was able to curl the ball beautifully into the bottom corner for 2-0. And the game was really up in the 65th minute when a third Kumamoto goal arrived, Sugiyama scoring again with a very deft chip over visiting Kanazawa keeper Yuto Shirai from Shohei Mishima's through pass. So Kumamoto 3, Kanazawa 0 at full time. Kumamoto looking very good at the moment, 5 games unbeaten and only a single goal conceded in that run. Kanazawa are in 13th in the table. In 7th place, 2 points outside the playoff zone, are Machida Zelvia, who won comfortably on the road at relegation-threatened Iwate. The final score was 3-1 to the visitors. Machida were 2-0 up and cruising at half-time, with Dudu involved in both goals. Firstly, in the 15th minute, his intelligent backheel set up a chance for Shusuke Ota inside the penalty area. Ota slotted in with some aplomb to put the visitors ahead. Then in the 36th minute, Dudu robbed the last defender, Sodai Hasukawa, when the Iwate man took too long on the ball in possession. Dudu then squared the ball for Ariyajasuru Hasegawa to tap in Machida's second from close range. In the second half, it seemed as though Iwate hadn't really learned the lessons from the first period, because when Machida got their third goal on the hour, the home side had been caught in possession again. This time, I think it was Masahito Onoda who was caught, not paying attention on the edge of his own penalty area by Hijiri Onaga, and he crossed for Ota to sweep in his second goal of the game. So all over, really, after an hour, with Machida 3-0 up. Iwate did pull back a consolation goal in second half stoppage time. Their captain Yusuke Muta scored with a looping header from a Morelato's free kick, but it finished Iwate 1, Machida 3. Iwate in 19th place, in a precarious position, just 2 points clear of the relegation zone at the moment. Staying at the bottom of the table, the bottom side Ryukyu continue to show some signs of life. They picked up a point from a hard-fought 0-0 draw at Tokushima in round 28. There was a big scare for Ryukyu in just the second minute, as Tokushima's Mushaga Bakenga went clean through, but goalkeeper Danny Carvajal did just about enough to snuff out the danger. At the other end, Takuma Abe almost put Ryukyu in front, but his shot was cleared off the line acrobatically by a header from Naoto Arai. In the second half, Tokushima had the majority of the chances, and Carvajal was called upon to make some really good saves to keep them out. And in stoppage time, Tokushima nearly snatched the win when Kazunari Ichimi's shot came back off the post. I wasn't sure if Carvajal, the goalkeeper, got a touch on the ball. If he did, it was a fantastic save, and it preserved a point for Ryukyu. It finished Tokushima 0, Ryukyu 0. Tokushima, incredibly, a 16th draw from 27 matches, with them in 14th in the table. Ryukyu are still bottom and 4 points adrift, but they are 4 games unbeaten, with 1 win and 3 draws in a row for their new boss, Nacho Fernandez. So they do have a platform to build on, and I'll be talking about Ryukyu in some detail with James Gallagher in a moment. Second bottom, Omiya Ardija also drew 0-0 at home to fellow strugglers Akita, who were 18th, but the Squirrels had a golden chance to win this game when they were awarded a stoppage time penalty, with Atsushi Kawata going down in an aerial collision with Akita's Yuji Wakasa. But it's just not Omiya's year, and Kawata managed to curve his spot kick against the outside of the post, and the opportunity was wasted. Wakasa for Akita had been a hero earlier in the second half, with a goal line clearance from a Shunsuke Kikuchi header. But it finished 0-0. Omiya should have won, I think it's fair to say, on the balance of play. But I should also say, by J2 standards, this was a pretty poor spectacle. I think both teams should be very worried about the 14 matches that they have left this season. Omiya winless in their last 7, and for Akita, no wins in any of their last 12. So perhaps not much of a surprise that this game finished 0-0. Now, Omiya are back in the relegation zone because Gunma sprang a real surprise, winning for the first time in absolutely ages 1-0 away at Yamagata. The crucial goal came midway through the first half when Akito Takagi flicked on a corner to the far post for Masaya Kojima to control and then fire the ball high into the roof of the net. Before that, though, Gunma had had a let-off with Akira Disaro heading the ball against the post in the 10th minute. And Yamagata threatened again before half-time. Hiroshi Kokubu missed the target by a fraction, and after that had a goal correctly ruled out for offside. The best chance in the second half fell to the home midfielder Ibuki Fujita, but his low effort from the edge of the penalty area just clipped the base of the post on its way out for a goal kick. So it finished Yamagata 0, Gunma 1. Gunma in 20th now, end their run of 6 straight defeats and are a point ahead of 21st place Omiya. Yamagata are in 10th. They've played 27 games so far and their record is 9 wins, 9 draws and 9 losses. Not quite consistent enough to be in and around the playoffs at the moment. They're 8 points off the top 6, but they do of course have that one game in hand. Finally, from round 28, Tochigi are a full 9 points clear of the relegation zone after a third win in 5 matches, this time 2-1 against Yamaguchi at Kanseki Stadium. A third straight defeat for Yamaguchi, who are only 5 points clear of the relegation zone now. Tochigi, by their standards, went absolutely goal crazy early on in this one, but they did have some help from the visitors in the 5th minute. Yamaguchi keeper Kentaro Seki fumbled the ball onto his own centre-back Henan, who couldn't react quickly enough and just ended up putting the ball into his own net for an unfortunate own goal. So 1-0 to Tochigi early on. It was 2-0 with a brilliantly worked goal in the 14th minute. The impressive rookie midfielder Kosuke Kanbe played in Hayato Kurosaki on the right-hand side of the penalty area, and he put an inch-perfect ball across the box to be converted by Ryo Nemoto. So yes, 2-0 to Tochigi very early on. Yamaguchi did their best to fight back. Before half-time, Kensuke Sato grazed the post with a low shot. And after the break, Tochigi keeper Shuhei Kawata had to make a great block from Takaya Numata to keep the visitors at bay. Yamaguchi did reduce the arrears midway through the second half to set up an exciting finish when Jin Ikoma headed in Wataru Tanaka's cross to make it 2-1. But that's how it finished. Tochigi 2, Yamaguchi 1. Another good result for an informed Tochigi side. They're in 16th and, yes, 3 points ahead of Yamaguchi, who are in 17th. All right, I think that's all of the on-field action from round 28 sorted out. With that in mind, that's all for me for this solo roundup, but please stay tuned in a moment. As mentioned, you're going to hear me talking to James Gallagher, and we're going to pick over the latest news and kind of info from Ryukyu, and we're also going to preview the round 29 matches coming up as well. So please stay tuned. You're going to hear me and James deep in conversation after this. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again for a kind of two-way chat to round up some more J2 action. And yeah, my partner in crime this week is a returning guest for his second appearance on JTest. It's James Gallagher. James, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, John. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good, thanks. Yeah, James, I know you originally contracted to talk to other James this week, but we've done a quick swap around with the schedule, but you were happy to talk to me instead, and I appreciate your flexibility on that. Hopefully it's a similar experience to your debut, which was very well received.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I know we were making a real case to change it to James Talk Extra Time, but we've still got the J Talk brand holding up strong, so that's good for us.
Yeah, I'm holding on by my fingertips to control of the pod here. But yeah, I think James Taylor will be back on the pod soon, I'm sure. But yeah, thanks for dropping in. Thanks for dropping in, James. Basically, James, listeners have already heard me rambling on about the 9 games from the J2 weekend in part one. So we're just going to do a deep dive on some of the kind of talking points from the match day and the season in general. Now, you're a Ryukyu supporter or Ryukyu follower, so it makes sense to start talking about them. I don't know how you want to spin this, because on the one hand, they're 4 points adrift at the bottom. You know, that's bad. But they are having a bit of a new manager bounce, aren't they, with Nacho Fernandez? It's 4 games unbeaten, albeit 3 draws in a row. And I thought there were some positives from the game away at Tokushima at the weekend. That was quite a hard-fought point. I thought there were some positive signs. So what are we glass half full or half empty on Ryukyu at the moment?
Oh, I would say half full, just because we've earned some glass half full at this point in the season, and being able to take a point on the road where Ryukyu had 30% possession. I think anytime you're able to take away a point from a match where the other team holds the ball for that long, I think is definitely a glass half full moment. Ryukyu definitely had some good looks on net Takuma Abe had a rocket cleared off the line, and Shinya Uehara had a good look as well later in the match. But having that opportunity to go on the road against a traditionally defensive, stonewalling opponent like Vortis, I think it's very much, at least in the perspective of how Ryukyu looked offensively, it's very much a glass half full and a point well played.
No, I think that's right. I think the scariest moment was probably just in the second minute, wasn't it, when Mishaga Bakenga went clean through for Tokushima, and there was just that moment. I think Danny Carvajal actually did really well to put him off and snuff out the chance, but there was just for me like a heart in mouth moment of, is the referee going to give a penalty, you know, and a red card here for the goalkeeper? I don't think there was any contact. I think it was the correct decision to not say anything, but you know, teams down at the bottom, the luck tends to go against them in situations like that. So
absolutely. I think, and Danny Carvajal has been just so part of that resurgence that Nacho Fernandez has provided, being able to, one thing that I have really seen from him in the last few matches is how he's directing the defense. Mm-hmm. Much more vocal, much more hands-on, telling his defense what he needs, and putting them where he needs them. I think with the type of rotation that has occurred in Ryukyu's back line this season, as well as just trying to do more with less, I think has been a common theme at that back line this season, and it hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. 47 goals allowed in 28 matches played is definitely north of where we want to be, but Danny Carvajal has really done a good job of making saves when he needs to. In the Morioka match, he had a save in the 89th minute that was a hand from nowhere that preserved 3 points. And he's done really well with positioning defenses, not only in free kicks, but preventing those massive early mistakes, as evidenced in that second minute scare, as it were. But the defense has looked shaky at moments. And one thing that, just looking at some of the past lineups, is how much Ryukyu defenders are featuring in the midfield this season. Takashi Kanai, Yuki Omoto, our friend Lee Yong-jik, friend of the podcast, and Keita Tanaka, all featuring in midfield roles at one time or another, in the midfield, really putting more pressure on the back line to be solid, to prevent even more goals from going in, and more importantly, just preventing just rocket opportunities for the opposing attackers. And it's something that it's been a pleasant sight to see from Carvajal, a more hands-on approach in getting his defenders where he needs them to, because sometimes defenders make great plays, but sometimes positioning makes good plays and positioning makes good saves. And Ryukyu has really needed a lot of that this season.
Mm. Yeah, I think Carvajal's one of these players where he, be fair to say, he's quite stocky, perhaps edging close to being barrel-chested, you know, some might say, but he's actually a lot more agile and kind of athletic than he looks on TV, I think. Like, he made some really good saves in the second half against Tokushima at the weekend, didn't he? And you kind of... He's one of these keepers where I'm always kind of surprised when he's beaten. He's very agile. And I think Ryukyu are well blessed with goalkeepers, but I think it's probably fair to say Junto Taguchi's not had a particularly good season, up to this point. So perhaps making a change and having Danny Carvajal back as number one has been good. Are there any other changes that you've noticed from Nacho Fernandez since he's come in? I mean, has there been any shift in formation or tactics, or is it just the case that the players are looking a bit more confident now? He's given them a bit more belief than they had before.
The simple answer is yes. In terms of how the team has looked different, it's been something where if Ryukyu this season, if you were baking a relegation cake, there would be a lot of ingredients in that cake that you would see in this team in terms of early season struggles, in terms of critical injuries in players that shoulder a lot of the offensive and defensive load, conceding late goals. Checking my notes here, 13 goals allowed in the last 15 minutes of matches this season. Just a lot of what teams have to find ways to prevent, or challenges that teams need to overcome if they're trying to stay up. And Nacho has really started to turn that around. In addition to the challenges that he's facing, a lot of recent injuries. Yuki Kusano, responsible for 7 goals in 16 matches, still has not returned. And it has been looking to replace him because he was such a positive offensive asset earlier in the season. Koki Kiyotake and Keigo Numata both going down in the Morioka match for at least a month. Kiyotake with a cheek fracture, and that's a major piece of losing him just for his midfield presence, his free kick presence. The new striker Kelvin pulling a hamstring against Sendai, and so the formation has adjusted, I think, in part for what needs to change. I think in part because of who has been able to fill those roles. One thing that I have definitely seen since Nacho has taken over is the default early in the season was if the attack fizzled out, was to pass all the way back to the keeper and to try and rebuild the attack from the back. This season, there's a lot more, or since Fernandez has taken over, there has been a lot more forward movement with the ball, not only in how the Ryukyu defense, their clearances are much more bombing forward in nature, trying to start attacks from a large or long distance defensive clearance, trying to create more out of the back with goal kicks or defensive free kicks, getting the ball forward, because I think those challenges in midfield with defenders filling in, as well as just struggling to really build quality, precise attacks from the midfield, I think has facilitated more of a move the ball forward and get it where it needs to be, and do something with it from there, as opposed to working from all the way at the back and trying to build that attack in a short passing, eventually moving forward manner. And so Fernandez has really provided more of that simplicity in moving forward perspective that I think at least some of the fans that I've chatted with appreciate. Just move the ball forward. If there's nothing, if the attack isn't taking, it isn't going to take all the way from short passes back to the goalkeeper.
I think that's a really good point, and it's something that frustrates me, sort of whoever I watch in J2 really is. I think teams, and anybody listening to this who's not British would probably be groaning, because this is a standard kind of British moan, teams passing the ball backwards is boring or wasting time. But I think it depends on the context, doesn't it? Sometimes in J2 I'll see players that they'll be virtually on the edge of the other team's penalty area, and just because there isn't anybody to pass to, they'll go all the way back to the keeper. And you're kind of giving away a lot of territory there, I feel. And also, if we're being honest, James, at level, we're talking about passing the ball back to your own goalkeeper is not necessarily taking as good care of the ball as you think. Like, some J2 teams contrive to give away goals, don't they, when their own goalkeeper or their own defenders have got the ball. So I think that's a really good point. And I think maybe I was talking to other James on the pod about this, about how Nacho Fernandez, or maybe it was Stuart Smith, different people, but same topics. But, it was kind of a brave appointment bringing in Fernandez. I think it was pretty obvious that they needed to make a change, because I think Tetsuhiro Kina, the previous manager, they were obviously going down, I think, with him in charge. He lost any kind of momentum that he'd had there. But it was interesting that Ryukyu didn't go for a kind of journeyman firefighter Japanese manager. Instead, they went for a foreign coach without any J League experience. So in that sense, it's kind of a gamble that I hope pays off, because I think it's quite a brave roll of the dice from Ryukyu. Go ahead, James.
I really appreciate that perspective, because it was clear that something needed to change. And it's a shame that Kina didn't work out. He being from Okinawa and definitely having a connection to the supporters and to the club was something that was something special to witness when it worked well. But when it didn't, when it stopped working and no changes were made and the same results were happening and the same mistakes were occurring, it became something of a precarious situation. I mean, this season, in 15 matches, Ryukyu has one win at home. Regardless of away form or what type of season you're having, that's not going to do it. Whether your goal is just merely survival or really having that team thrive, not just survive, but thrive as a club, as a team, as a side where other teams within the league are really, really afraid or really, putting in extra shifts to try and figure out how to beat them. Nacho Fernandez was I would be surprised if anyone had them on their ledgers as who might be the next manager. Some of the fans down in Okinawa joked, maybe it was time for Big Sam Allardyce. The board at Ryukyu probably didn't agree with that assessment.
I think that would be the end of Lee Yong-jik at centre-back for sure, if that was the case.
But, it's been a really interesting hire, and the observable changes in the side, I think, have been for the better. And to see, even if, still 5, technically 6 points from any type of safety, but the glass does appear to be, at the very least, more half full than it was at the beginning of the season. Having our first unbeaten streak of the season currently at 4, and time is of the essence. But seeing small improvements in the side is something that we've waited a whole season for.
Let's talk about the rest of the season then, because you mentioned one home win so far, which is objectively not great. Ryukyu have got four wins total. If they maintain that for the final third of the season, I make that 6 wins from 42 matches. That's not going to be enough. You know, they need to start winning games sooner rather than later, don't they? And we talked about, as you correctly highlighted, it's defence that's been the weakness. Because I think in terms of goal scoring, they've scored 28, which isn't going to blow anybody's socks off. But it's the same as Jeff Cheever in 10th. You know, the difference is Cheever, I think, have conceded 29, whereas Yuki, you mentioned, have let in 47, which is way too many. You're always going to be struggling at the wrong end of the table with stats like that. But I'm just looking at the bottom of the table, James. I'm feeling dangerous tonight, so I'm gonna call it. I think the teams that are kind of on about 34. I think there's three teams on. I'm just actually checking to make sure I get this right. Three teams on 34 points in the table. That's Tokushima, Kofu, Tochigi. That puts them 9 points clear of the relegation zone with a third of the season to go. I think that more or less makes them safe. I mean, obviously not mathematically, but I think they've shown enough that they're going to be all right. Yamaguchi are on 31, a bit precarious, but I still think they've shown enough that they'll probably be okay barring a major collapse in the last third of the season. I think the five teams below Yamaguchi are the ones that are really in trouble. So from bottom upwards, that's Ryukyu, Omiya, Gunma, Morioka, or Iwate rather, and Akita. Now, I don't know if you watched the Omiya-Akita game at the weekend or saw the highlights, but that was we often talk about good adverts for J2 football. That was a pretty good advert for J3 football, because there wasn't much difference between that and the level below. That was a pretty poor game of football. Iwate had a good run a month or so ago, but they're struggling again now. And Gunma, I think if we were recording this podcast a week earlier, we would say they're probably bottom of the form table, but then they've gone and had that win away at Yamagata in the last round. I'm not going to ask you if Ryukyu can get out of it, because I think the answer is a definite yes, they can. But who are they going to climb over to get out of the drop zone? Because, you know, none of the five teams I mentioned there are looking too clever. Who do you think are the who do you think's most likely to go down, if not Ryukyu then?
Yeah, honestly, it's hoping that Ryukyu finds the correct blend of what is new and appears to be working to clear what I think will be Omiya and Gunma. Yes, that's the easy answer, just based on how the table currently sits, but not only having squandered nearly every opportunity against Omiya this season, Ryukyu have lost an away match and an Emperor's Cup match to them, while only drawing at home 1-1 recently. But one thing that I am buoyed by in terms of being a Ryukyu supporter is that seven of Ryukyu's last 14 matches are against bottom half, 11th or worse teams. And if it's going to be done, you've got to, at this point in the season, it's got to be against teams where it is a reasonable expectation that you can beat them. The goals are there, the goals can be defended, and I do think in terms of, again, Gunma's most recent match notwithstanding, that there are a lot of questions about how that side will maintain their current status. And Omiya has shown quality and has shown calamity. And I think if Ryukyu are to harness the current schedule that they have in front of them, I think Kumamoto at the weekend may be a tough one to be sure. But what I'll also add to that 7 of 14 matches being against bottom half teams is that, fortunately, based on Ryukyu's home form, 5 of those matches are away. And so with 3 out of 4 wins coming on the road this season, if ever the eternal optimist, really trying to read the tea leaves in a way that finds us, you know, 20th or better on the final day.
I expect nothing less than optimism from Ryukyu at this point. Like if you're on a 4-game unbeaten run, then you've earned the right to be optimistic and positive.
You're telling me there's a chance.
No, definitely. Well, I'm still not convinced. I mean, this is a, you know, kind of comparing squads or looking at teams on paper in J2 is kind of a bit of a mug's game, as we say in the UK, James. But yeah, I think I'm not persuaded. I'm not convinced that Ryukyu have got the worst squad in that division. I don't think there's any way that's the worst group of players. I think, Gunma look a little bit short of quality. I think they have to work extremely hard to get points, like they did away at Yamagata at the weekend just gone. I think Akita, not a bad side in inverted commas, but no real progress has been made from last season. So it's been a clear sort of regression, I think, from them in the last couple of months, where they've been found out a little bit by other teams. And they haven't really had an answer or a plan B. And I haven't really seen any great attempts from them to develop their style, if you like. So I think that means they're always likely to be slipping down the table. Almia defy analysis, really, just a basket case at this point. Again, I'm still not convinced that's the second worst group of players in the division, but they were the third worst last season, pretty much, and doesn't matter who the coach is or whatever players they bring in. I mean, even Atsushi Kawata, the player that we've been sort of crying out for to have more minutes and start games, he's caught the Omiya disease, if you like, because he was missing chances, including that penalty at the end of the game. So rather than being like the kind of tentacles of doom are dragging him as well, rather than being the guy that's kind of lifting them up, he's being dragged down to Omiya's level. I don't know what the answer is to Omiya's problems, but I'll give Ryukyu a puncher's chance. James, I think that there's some good players in that team, especially the offensive players, like you mentioned. So, why not? I mean, it's J2 after all. So anything can happen.
If the players that I've mentioned earlier can, specifically Kusano, Kiyotake, and even Kelvin returning to form, the spark that they could provide, specifically Kusano, Yuki Kusano just looked exactly like what Ryukyu needed at the beginning of the season, watching him in warmups, watching him just being an attacker where he could bring the rest of the side forward, and even if he wasn't scoring the goal himself, he was creating opportunities that players would want to follow, taking shots where, oh, that looks dangerous, I want to be somewhere close to that. And I think right now, it was seen a little bit from Abe this past weekend, but right now Ryukyu needs not only, you know, that star attacker, but that player that their forward presence, their inspiration to their midfield, lights a fire under people, because we will take the goals from whoever they come from. Omori scoring his first career goal against Iwate in the 1-0 victory off of a set piece. Hey, you want bread, go to the store. You want goals, go to the front of the net, and good things happen. And whether it's coming from central defenders, whether it's coming from Kelvin, like his goal at Tokyo Verde, whether it comes from some of our new signings, whoever's got goals in them, it's we're running out of opportunities to show that skill. And I think that just based on the quality of the side, I do agree with you, John, that in terms of objective quality in a side, I don't think Ryukyu's as bad as their record or points total currently finds them.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think on Kusano, and I'll roll in Takuma Abe, because I think these guys have something in common, which is they are finishers. Like, if you can create chances and the ball goes into the penalty area, they get goals. Takuma Abe, I don't think his fitness, or I don't think his body's not in the condition it used to be, obviously, because he's getting on a little bit now. But yeah. he is such a good finisher. And I think that could be crucial in the final run-in, because if you look at Gunma's team, who is the finisher? You know, they don't really have one. Off the top of my head, you know, it's pretty random who goes in. Shu Hiramatsu's got five goals, but he misses a lot of chances. At Ryukyu, if a chance falls in the box to Abe or Kusano, if he's back and fit, I think that's a shot on target, potentially a goal. Shinya Uehara I like a lot, but he's not a finisher. I think he showed that with the chance that you mentioned, the chance he had in the second half at Tokushima, should have buried that chance. Although he got a shot on target, it was easy for the keeper to save. So I think, you know, I look at Ryukyu's squad, that they have two finishers, if you like, in Abe and Kusano, whereas I think Omiya have got half in Kawata, but that's it. I think Akita don't have any finisher, really, any deadly finisher up front. Gunma don't have a deadly finisher, you know, who, when the ball falls to them in the box, you're like, oh, well, here's a goal. So I think that could be something which is beneficial in the 14 games coming up. So fingers crossed for Kelvin's hamstring as well, of course, because he showed that he can finish with that goal against Verdi also. Okay, James, good chat. I don't think we can resolve anything definitely at this point with 14 games still to go. It's going to be exciting stuff. Speaking of finishing, though, James, before I let you go, let's look ahead to the weekend games coming up. Round 29 is going to be upon us with indecent haste, I suppose. So most of the matches in J2 for round 29 are going to be on Saturday, July the 30th. In fact, 10 of the 11 fixtures are on Saturday. So three games at 6 p.m. It's the leaders, Yokohama FC, hosting a relegation-threatened Iwate, who are 19th. We also have Tochigi against Tokushima, 0-0 or 1-1, probably. And Mito against Omiya. So, difficult assignment for second-bottom Omiya as they go to mid-table. Mito. The big game that we're probably going to talk about in a minute, James, is the only one at 6:30, which is Ryukyu hosting Kumamoto, so the bottom side hosting a sixth place team who are in pretty good form at the moment. And then a rock of games, a slew of games at 7 p.m. We have at Nagasaki against Niigata. That's a big one, isn't it? Fourth against second. And at third place, Sendai go to Yamaguchi, who are 17th. We also have Okayama against Jeff Chiba. I thought that was quite an interesting one. Fifth against ninth. And Yamagata against Machida is also at 7 p.m. Gunma, third bottom, they host 15th place Kofu. And Oita host Tokyo Verdy. The only game on Sunday, July the 31st, is at 7 p.m. And it's Kanazawa against another out-of-form side in the form of Akita. So, James, I suppose we better talk about the Ryukyu-Kumamoto game, since you're here in the kind of Ryukyu hot seat. Home form is not Ryukyu's strong point. Away form is Kumamoto. So, I don't know, change my mind.
Wouldn't I love to? And Kumamoto's form of four wins in their last five, and a draw in that match against Tokushima, they're a side that talent concerns you and form concerns you. And with just their recent form on top of Toshiki Takahashi, a fair amount of goals recently, Ryukyu's defense would be well served to have one of their better performances on the season. Getting the midfield to be supportive of the attack would be something that would be a pleasant sight for Ryukyu supporters. Whether it's coming from quality crosses from Keita Tanaka or more of that hold-up play that Takashi Kanai has shown that he's capable of. That may be how Ryukyu achieves that. But given the talent and given the form of Kumamoto, it's It's a tall task for Ryuki this weekend.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think Kumamoto are red hot at the moment, and Gary Ewing was very confident that they were going to beat Kanazawa at the weekend, and they did that quite easily, didn't they? It was 3-0, I think, in the end. But they're not unbeatable. I think they can be got at. I guess it remains to be seen if Ryuki are able to do that. But it would be a good weekend to get some points, wouldn't it? Not to state the obvious. Obviously, Iwate are away, Omi are away, Gunma are hosting Kofu. It's not an easy game for them. Akita away to Kanazawa on Sunday. So if Ryuki can get something, even another draw would keep the unbeaten run going, wouldn't it? And give everybody a bit of a platform to work from for the next game. So hope it all goes well. But Gary, if Gary's listening, I hope it goes well for you as well. I'm gonna play both sides there and just make sure everybody hope football's the winner in that one. And any other games that you think look intriguing, James, on the slate for round 29? Maybe one or two others that the listeners might want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, the easy answer is that Nagasaki Niigata match. Just how much quality is in both sides towards the top of the table. Juninho's got four goals in his last four games. Niigata has five players with five goals or more. There's so much talent in both of those sides that I think it'll be really interesting. But for me, we mentioned it before we began recording. For me, just a team that I always try to watch because it's never known what they're going to do is Okayama playing Chiba on the weekend. It's the same team that can draw 0-0 at home to Tochigi and then go on the road and win 3-2 at Niigata. Just a fascinating team to watch. Always a source of entertainment. I think it was match week one where they put up four to start the season, and Thiago Alves trying to restore some of that early season form, but also Yudai Tanaka, just a quality young midfielder. That there's some real talent on that side, and just a side that if Ryukyu isn't on the television, I do try and catch an Okayama match.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good shout. And also, name checking Thiago Alves. He was the first name that came into my mind when you mentioned the opening day win that they had. Yeah, the big win in round one. But he's definitely been kind of off the scene recently. So it'd be interesting to see if he appears, looms large again. One player who is back on the scene is Mitch Duke for Okayama. I think the header that he scored was brilliant at the weekend, and I think that was his first goal for quite a while, for a month or so. So if he's back among the goals, that could spell trouble for Jeff Chiba. And you mentioned unpredictable sides that you never quite know what you're going to get. I think Jeff are probably in that category as well. Maybe not quite Okayama's level, but we could be in for a real sort of unpredictable match. I suppose as well, we'll mention, Jeff obviously had the weekend off, didn't they? Their game was postponed in round 28 due to COVID, so perhaps that extra rest will do them good. But I gave up predicting Jeff Chiba performances a long time ago, James. Yeah, we've been burned far too many times on that. So yeah, I think that's a good shout. And yeah, that Nagasaki Niigata you mentioned, that could, in final analysis, at the end of the season, that could turn out to be a pivotal game, because I think if Nagasaki can win it, they're right back in the mix for automatic promotion. I think that, to be honest, they're in the mix already, but they will be right up there, won't they, with a chance of finishing in the top two. Whereas if Niigata win, then that gap sort of starts to seem to open up a little bit again. So all to play for many teams, and hopefully there are loads of goals, but not too many, because I think I'm hosting the pod again next week, and I could do with a nice quiet night. A few more nil-nils would be good for me, just from an admin point of view. But yeah, no, only joking. Hope there are goals galore for everyone to enjoy the weekend. James, anything we've missed? Anything you want to add? Or where can people follow you on Twitter if they want to?
I am at FL Man in Japan, aka Florida Man in Japan. I am currently recording this from an undisclosed root in sponsor of J-League football. At Florida Man in Japan and nearly every Ryukyu home match, work schedule dependent.
Good. Yes. Yeah. People should definitely follow you and keep up with it. Keep up with your events and news. Yeah. And also they could tweet you funny like Florida Man headlines that they found in newspapers. Or it could be Area. Would you accept Area Man? You know, sometimes it's Area Man, isn't it?
I do my best to represent Florida as a place of occasional quality, but the news clearly defeats me, and so it's merely a damage control, much like Ryukyu's defense this season, trying to keep balls out of the net. It's merely trying to provide the most positive light I can paint Florida Man.
Nicely put. Yeah, damage control, damage limitation. That's what we try and do on the pod as well. So it's a good match, perfect match, I think. All right, well, James, thanks for coming through. It's really good to talk to you and get your thoughts on Ryukyu. And I hope the next 14 games are a little bit less stressful than the first 28 have been this season. But yeah, please come through again, hopefully before the end of the year, and catch up with us and let us know how Nacho Fernandez and the guys are getting on. For the listeners, stay tuned though. I think James and I are gonna take a break at this point, but after a quick bit of music, all of the J3 news is coming your way. Magic, Mike Innes is back, refreshed after a holiday / vacation. He's got all the J3 latest for you in J Talk Short Corner. So yeah, please stay tuned. Mike will be along in a moment. And yeah, enjoy your football. Talk to you soon. J Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and I'd like to thank Jaunty James Taylor for a sterling job on J3 duty last week. In this episode, I'll be looking back on the matches in round 18, as well as previewing the round 19 games coming up this weekend. Straight into the action this week, and there were 6 round 18 games on Saturday the 23rd of July. There were scheduled to be 7, but the top of the table clash between Iwaki FC and Matsumoto Yamaga was postponed due to a COVID outbreak at Matsumoto. That gave Kagoshima United the chance to reclaim top spot, and they took it thanks to a narrow win at Vanrare Hachinohe. The only goal of the game came 18 minutes from time, a Kagoshima counter-attack set up by a long ball from Masayoshi Endo. Rei Yonezawa picked it up and advanced into the area to feed Frank Romero, who had an easy job to slide it past Kazuki Hattori. Yonezawa, in an unfamiliar position on the right, was twice denied by good saves from Hattori, while Vanrare's best chance came with 5 minutes remaining, Aoi Sato's low cross being flicked just over the bar by former Kagoshima striker Yusei Kayanuma. Final score, Hachinohe 0, Kagoshima 1. Not a stellar performance, but a clean sheet and 3 points for Naoto Otake's team in response to last week's shock defeat by Sagami Hana. Ryo Shigaki's been in charge at Vanrare for 6 games now, and this was his 5th loss. There were important wins for 2 teams trying to get up into the promotion race. Fujieda Mai FC are 4th, only 3 points behind Kagoshima after a home victory over Giramantsi Kitakyushu. No news from the club on this, but it looks as if Mai FC front players Tomoyuki Doi and Ekiyuki Yokoyama may both have picked up injuries. What is definitely true, though, is that against Kitakyushu, Ryo Watanabe, their sensational signing from near neighbours Azul Claro Numazu, started for the first time in a Fujieda shirt. And Mai FC went ahead in only the 4th minute Tojiro Kubo catching Giravant's defender Takaya Inui in possession, twisting round Yasufumi Nishimura and queuing up Masahiko Sugita to finish from 12 yards. Things quickly got even better for Fujieda as on 7 minutes, Jun Suzuki swung in a corner, new man Watanabe headed it on, and against a static defence, Keisuke Ogasawara had no difficulty knocking it in at the far post. My FC were mostly in control from this point, but in the 58th minute, Kitakyushu did pull one back. Taiga Maekawa heading in Ryo Sato's dinked cross, poor marking leaving Maekawa in lots of space, and keeper Kei Uchiyama somehow allowing the ball to sneak inside the post. But in the 73rd minute, Fujieda restored their two-goal lead thanks to a high press which repeatedly caused the visitors problems. In this case, it was Yuki Nakayama whose pass went astray. Ryota Iwabuchi held off a challenge from Takashi Kawano and laid it off for Kubo, whose angled shot beat the unsighted Yuki Kato at the near post. With 3 minutes to go, a long pass into the home box caused a goalmouth scramble, but Ryo Sato screwed his shot wide and Giravant's hopes of getting anything from the match disappeared. Final score, Fujieda 3, Kitakyushu 1. Neither side impressing with their defensive solidity. My FC clinical in front of goal and Ryo Watanabe looking promising as he beds into his new team. Giravants were without Yuya Takazawa and couldn't recover from their slow start. Alongside Fujieda, another team to put pressure on the front runners were Ehime FC, who eventually emerged triumphant from a dramatic game at SC Sagamihara. Ehime went in front with 7 minutes on the clock, centre-back Naoki Kuriyama beating Yudai Fujiwara to head in at the near post, a corner from Asahi Yada. Having gone behind early, Sagamihara suffered another blow when dynamic striker Takumi Kato had to be replaced in only the 13th minute. Soon afterwards, Yada almost made it 2-0 with a powerful 20-yard shot, well saved by homekeeper Kentaro Kakoi, and the Mighty Mikan's second duly arrived in the 36th minute. A quick break down the Ehime right, Takashi Kondo cut it back for Shuma Mihara, whose clever flick set up Riki Matsuda to finish past the exposed Kakoi. Some Sagamihara complaints of offside, but not ones that stood up to scrutiny. And that's 4 in 6 games now for Matsuda, picking up pace after a slow start following his move from Cerezo Osaka. Heading into the final quarter, the match took a sharp change of direction as Sagamihara pulled one back when Jungo Fujimoto drove in a corner. Kensei Nakashima's header was tipped straight up into the air by Kenta Tokushige and Tsubasa Ando nodded it over the line from under the crossbar. And with 10 minutes left, Tokushige again could have done better when the 38-year-old failed to keep out Kensei Ukita's header from a cross by Daisuke Watabe. Suddenly the match was tied at 2-2. But it stayed like that for only 3 minutes as Sagamihara couldn't clear an Ehime corner. Yada and Motoki Ohara combined to feed Mihara, whose 25-yard rocket deflected off Ukita to loop over Kakoi and in off the bar. Final score, Sagamihara 2, Ehime 3. Norihiro Satsukawa, for some reason, made 4 changes to the Sagamihara side that beat Kagoshima last time out. The squad looks directionless. 5 wins in the last 6 for Kiyotaka Ishimaru's entertaining Ehime. An exciting game too at Fukushima United, where Gainare Tottori threw away a 2-goal lead in the last 10 minutes to go home with nothing. Against the run of play, Kim Jong-song's struggling team took the lead in the 59th minute when a misplaced pass in the centre circle by Fukushima's Hiroto Morooka fell to Taiki Arai, who sprinted forwards and then, 25 yards from goal, unleashed a shot that fizzed past Kaito Yamamoto and in off the post. And the division's second bottom team went 2-0 up 8 minutes later, Ryosuke Tamura converting a penalty awarded for handball against Shun Obu. The Fukushima fight back began in the 80th minute when Tottori couldn't clear their lines. Hiroto Yukie sent a beautiful clipped ball to the far post and Riku Hashimoto half-volleyed in. An equaliser almost came seconds later, Yukie's perfectly judged pass setting up Junya Takahashi to cross for debutant Ibrahim Junior Kuribara, whose shot was deflected round the post by defender Yusuke Ishida. Even so, in the 83rd minute, it was 2-2. Kota Mori sending a corner kick straight to the edge of the box, and Morooka, who fired in a first-time 20-yarder that gave Tottori keeper Ken Tajiri no chance. The lively Mori was involved in the winner as well, his diagonal run and pass setting up Hashimoto for a cross that was met by Takahashi's right boot with perfect timing to send the ball beyond Tajiri and inside the far post. It's more than 2 months since Junya Takahashi scored in the league, and that too was against Gainare, the celebration an expression of his relief at ending that goal drought. Final score, Fukushima 3, Tottori 2. Fukushima's first win since that mid-May victory down in Tottori, and they played some good football to get it. Gainare, now on a run of 4 straight losses, and Kim hasn't sorted out that defence. Hirofumi Yamauchi gave FC Gifu an early lead in their home game against Kamatamari Sanuki, getting on the end of Junya Tanaka's flick-on of a well-weighted cross from Heniki to finish at the far post, with a surreptitious check for an offside flag to follow. The Noodle Boys pulled level midway through the first half, Kohei Matsumoto scrambling the ball somewhat luckily over the line after excellent work by 20-year-old Taiyo Shimokawa picking up his first start of the season. But Kamatamari couldn't maintain parity and fell behind again in the 54th minute when Hayato Hasegawa was out-muscled by Kosuke Fujioka, who received the pass from Tanaka and beat Takuya Takahashi from 8 yards. 9 for the season now for Fujioka. Matsumoto almost scored what would have been a sensational equaliser, chesting a floated pass from Keisuke Tao, twisting in the air and striking a volley before the ball hit the ground, but his shot went just wide. Final score, Gifu 2, Sanuki 1. Gifu bring to an end their 3-game losing streak, but they're mired in mid-table. Kamatamari are in the bottom 4, struggling for goals again. Azul Claro Numazu suffered a rare home loss at the hands of FC Imabari. Numazu had a number of near misses, such as when the impressive Kosei Uryu had a shot headed off the line by Tomoya Ando, and Kotaro Tokunaga's perfectly struck 20-yard volley was tipped over by Shu Mogi. The only goal of the game came 18 minutes from time, Ando getting himself on the end of a lofted free kick and knocking it back for Imabari's teenage striker Kanta Chiba to fire into the roof of the net. Final score, Numazu 0, Imabari 1. A disappointing result for Azul Claro, but on the evidence of the season so far, they'll play worse and win. Kazumaki Hashikawa's Imabari are tough to break down and can usually be relied on to nick a goal, which is what happened here. Then on Sunday the 24th, Katare Toyama consolidated their hold on 5th place by winning at bottom side YSCC Yokohama. But Toyama started badly, falling behind in the 6th minute when YSCC's Yutaro Yanagi picked up a loose ball, advanced upfield and slipped a pass to Shuntaro Kawabe, who accelerated past Takuma Shikayama and fired inside the far post. Qatari appeared to sleep through the first half, but as so often has happened this season, they woke up with the appearance of Jorge Orno as an attacking substitute. 6 minutes into the second half, Toyama had a goal disallowed. Makoto Rindo's lofted pass headed down by Orno for Tsubasa Yoshihira, who beat Ryosuke Sagawa from close range but was adjudged offside. The equaliser came in the 64th minute, a cross from another substitute, Shunta Takahashi, eluding both Sagawa and Takuya Fujiwara, somehow making its way to the far post, and Orno, who tucked in his seventh of the season. Not a bad strike rate considering he hasn't started a single game. Despite it being another underwhelming performance by Qatari, they duly stole the win in injury time. Rindo switching the play with another long ball, Daiki Yagishita knocking it back for Tepe Usui, whose curling cross was headed home by Shota Kawanishi. Final score, YSCC 1, Toyama 2. The home side undone by some lacklustre defence and an inability to keep the pace through to the final whistle, while for Qatari, mention must be made of Yagishita, involved in the winning goal and playing his first match since rupturing his ACL against YSCC last October. And finally, in an exciting round 18, an action-packed game between AC Nagano Parseiro and Tegevajano Miyazaki, the away side, on a wretched run of form since beating Nagano in round 11, took a shock lead in the 17th minute, rookie right-back Masaki Ogawa hitting a cheeky free kick in at the near post when the Parseiro backline were expecting to defend a high ball. And in the 26th minute, Miyazaki went 2-up via a counter-attack, which concluded with Yudai Tokunaga feeding Takuma Sonoda, whose 20-yard shot struck defender Hayato Ikegaya to loop over Issei Oichi and in. To say that Nagano roared out of the blocks in the second half is an understatement, as in the 47th minute, Takuya Miyamoto set Hayate Sugi racing down the left-hand side, and his cross was met at the far post by an absolute bullet of a header from Yuta Sato. Not so much a goal as a statement of intent. 10 minutes later, Parseiro were level, their high press impenetrable for Tegevajaro, and the ball falling to Sato, whose curling cross was converted with a brilliantly timed header by Hiroki Yamamoto. Nagano's winner came 5 minutes from the end. Sugi's long ball down the left, too difficult for Ryota Kamino to deal with, enabling Carlos Duke to get in a shot that was parried by Shunsuke Ueda, only for Ryoji Fujimori's improvised diving header to find the empty net. Final score, Nagano 3, Miyazaki 2. A galvanising win for Yuki Stouff's side, who now have 10 points from the last four games. For Yasushi Takasaki and Tegevajaro, their losing streak now stands at 7. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 18, noting that Iwaki, Matsumoto, Imabari and YSCC all have a game in hand. The top four teams are Kagoshima with 38 points, then Iwaki and Matsumoto have 37 and Fujieda 35. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are Sanuki in 15th with 17 points, Hachinohe with 13, Tottori 12, and bottom with 8, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to this weekend and round 19, acknowledging the sad likelihood of there being COVID-related postponements again. For now, though, there are 6 scheduled games on Saturday the 30th. Certainly a couple of big matches on the slate here. Leaders Kagoshima go to in-form Fujieda. That's 4th against 1st, and it's 5th against 2nd as well, Toyama against Iwaki. improving Nagano have another opportunity to pick up points at Sanuki. Imabari head up to Fukushima. Gifu make the trip to struggling Tottori. And it's 12th against 11th, Kitakyushu against Numazu. The remaining three matches are all on Sunday the 31st. Promotion-chasing Matsumoto are at home to lowly Hachinohe. In form, Ehime aren't out of the race and they play host to YSCC. And finally, two sides in desperate need of points meet at Miyazaki, where the visitors are Sagamihara. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.